Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on April 29th, 2015, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mike Maggiore. I program the premieres with Film Forum director Karen Cooper, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you to the U.S. theatrical premiere of Albert Maysl's Iris. This is a bittersweet occasion. Al Maysl's passed away in March and didn't have a chance to see this wonderful, buoyant film open in theaters. But he was there at the New York Film Festival screening, which is where Karen and I saw the film, and watched this movie delight a totally sold-out theater audience who gave him and Iris Apfel a standing ovation. The New York Times has called Al Maysl's, quote, the dean of documentary filmmakers. Jean-Luc Godard called him the best American cameraman. Albert and his late brother, David, pioneered direct cinema and are responsible for some of the key documentary films of the past half century, including Salesman, Gimme Shelter, and Grey Gardens. Film Forum has had a long relationship with Albert Maysl's. We just showed a beautiful new 4K restoration of Grey Gardens. And if you've come here over the years, you'll know that this was not the first time that we brought that film and Gimme Shelter back to enthusiastic audiences. We've also showcased much of the Maysl's work in a series on 1960s cinema verite. We premiered A Concert of Wills, his fascinating documentary on the construction of Richard Meyer's Getty Center. And I'm very pleased to announce that Bruce Goldstein, Film Forum's repertory program director, is currently organizing a full Maysl's retrospective for early 2017. And this will include many rarely seen titles. And I'm very happy to have with us tonight two of the producers of Iris, Albert's daughter, Rebecca Maysl's, and Laura Coxon. Rebecca is a New York City-based artist and illustrator, and she is the managing director of Maysl's Films, Inc. Laura worked with Al Maysl's for many years, producer on a number of film projects, including Albert's documentary on Paul McCartney, The Love We Make, and she is the co-president of the New York Film and Video Council. Please welcome Rebecca Maysl's and Laura Coxon.
Thank you. We are really a little bit flabbergasted and so excited that this is playing here tonight and this week, and it's been really overwhelming, and excited to answer questions afterwards.
Yeah, although Al didn't get to see it at Film Forum, he knew that it was going to be playing here, and it made him really, really happy. So I hope you enjoy it and enjoy the spirit of Iris and also the spirit of Al that's in the film. And we'll be here afterwards for questions.
And our editor's also in the audience, yeah. So it can get...
Once again, Iris producers Rebecca Maysl's and Laura Coxon.
This is dangerous. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Well, congratulations. The film is finally opened, and it's getting fantastic reviews and publicity. Is there anyone, did you want to acknowledge Paul?
Yes, I said editor earlier, Paul Lovelace, editor and co-producer. And any editing questions?
Can you? He's right here, ringside, yeah. If anyone has editing questions. Maybe we can start, just by talking about how this project came about. I mean, Iris is obviously such a brilliant, engaging, wildly entertaining subject for a film. How did Albert meet her, and how did you two become involved in this?
I had been working at Maysl's for probably 6 years, and contrary to popular belief, Iris and Albert weren't longtime friends. The other producer, Jennifer Ash Rudick, actually knew Iris and sent me a cold email. I don't know if that's the right expression, but essentially an email out of nowhere to info@Maysl's saying, I think this woman would make a really interesting subject. Will you meet with us? And so Albert and I and Jennifer and Iris had this lovely meeting, and it felt really electric, and we weren't sure what might happen from it, but we started shooting, and that was May 2011 and or April 2011, and then sporadically kind of shooting on and off until 2014.
I came in a little bit later into it. They had been filming for a year, and then things with funding slowed down, and then Laura hustled and really got the money to finish it. And so I came in kind of the second part of it. But when we were still filming, and when Paul started editing, we were still filming while he was editing. So it kind of, we were still working on the film until like the week before the New York Film Festival.
And Carl's birthday was in August.
Yeah. And, you know, Al and Iris never wanted it to end. And I think they really enjoyed working with each other. And I mean, I've said this before, but, you know, I would catch my dad, like sneak off to Iris and say, you know, if there's ever something that comes up and you want me to shoot it, you know, I'll shoot it. And we're like, no, we can't.
To our slight annoyance, because at that point we'd been just shooting and shooting.
But they really enjoyed.
It just seems like you could just keep shooting, totally. And she would be delivering more and more of these, and you know, fantastic scenes.
I mean, I think about, you know, if my father was alive, he would be shooting this and be happy about, you know, shooting Iris going to the different Q&As and stuff.
It was also really fun. I mean, we were a small crew, and, you know, Paul came on some shoots, and then Sean Price-Williams and Nelson Walker, the third, were really our second cameras. And as you can see, there's a lot of flirtation between Iris and Albert, but also between Sean and Iris. And so we just were having a lot of fun. So that was the other reason it kind of kept going.
Yeah. And as you say, there was a flirtation between Albert and Iris. And it reminded me a bit of, in Grey Gardens, the flirtations between Albert and little Edie. And how did the decision to include a lot of that in the film come about?
I mean, I think that you can't deny that it's there. I mean, Al was pretty sensitive about that part of it, but I mean, so it kind of came in and out when it made sense, I guess. I mean, Paul could probably answer that better than I could, but you know, he was trying to figure out ways, like Al, in my mind, and maybe it's because I am very, you know, he passed really recently, but I feel like his spirit is really in it. And so to kind of see when he actually is there, and actually his presence is there too. You can't really deny
right.
it.
And Bruce Weber kind of breaks open that wall at that point.
Says, we were trying to find shoots that weren't what Iris expected, which was kind of to be on, or where we would, you know, set up a camera and interview her. So we were always trying to play with that. And she was so curious and didn't know that much about documentary filmmaking, but curious. And I feel like that collaboration, her collaboration was really like the Edies in that way too. It was the rapport between her and the crew.
Did you want to add anything, Paul? No. They covered it. Okay, great. Let's take some questions from the audience. Brian can pass the microphone around so we can all hear your questions. Just raise your hand. It looks like we've got one. On the aisle.
Wonderful job. Seeing this, I kept thinking of the title of Al's, I think, autobiography, Handheld and From the Heart. And I wondered where that stands, because this certainly felt handheld and from the heart.
We started working on it in the last year of his life. We started working on it and thinking about it and talking about it. It was a film that a lot of people had pitched to him and didn't make any sense for anyone other than him to really make it. It's something now when he was getting older that I felt a rush to do. And now that he's passed, I feel that it will happen, but it just needs to take time. But I think watching this and watching him and realizing, for me, like a little bit more of his spirit in it, I think is a different way to approach it. And I always thought of Handheld being about films, but also his eccentricities and the way that he would sew his labels in his clothes and how he would, you know, make things and how he would break rules. And so it's in the progress, but it's a slow process.
Another question right here in the stripes.
How did you select what to include and what to leave off?
That is a really good question for Paul, who Paul worked for really like the last year of the project, and we essentially handed over a lot of footage, because each of our shoots would be Albert and then a second camera. And so there was just, and we were in the beginning kind of going for it, and we shot the entire Texas programs the kids program like every day. That's a whole week of a lot of footage like to look through. We were shooting parties because that was really fun, though there's no sound, you know, and it was dark and it didn't make sense. And it was difficult. I think that was the nice thing when Paul started. He looked through everything, and I will let you speak to this too, because it was like he looked through everything and then came on some shoots, which I think was actually really helpful just to get a sense of what it was like and what Iris was like and kind of part understanding a little bit more. But
do you want to say something?
No, I mean, that pretty much sums it up. I mean, we watched the footage, and that's why it took a lot of time, just because there was so much to go through. And we just kept working at it, trying to find the right structure, the right rhythm. But, you know, there's a lot of footage. There's a lot of great stuff that didn't get included. But, you know, we got to a point, and there was a deadline, but we got to a point where we just felt, we all felt happy with it, and we got there.
But I should warn you, Iris at a Q&A the other day said, there should be a sequel if anyone wants. There's so much footage.
I think it's not a bad idea.
She said four films, actually. Yeah. She said, there's enough on the cutting room
for
four films.
Yeah, miniseries. Yeah.
Where was she taking that that Texas class? It's a one-week intensive.
So this is a bit of a failure on our part, I think, because when we first met her, we thought, oh, we'll follow you on this class. This is in 2011, and she doesn't have an assistant. She doesn't do email. She does everything by the phone, but she basically arranged for them to meet with five different people every day, Monday through Friday, around town, covering the scope of fashion. So they were going to like marketing people. They were going to designers. It was like exhaustive and really big, exciting people. And she was arranging and scheduling everything. And so each year we try to get that time before when she was making the phone calls and setting everything up rather than just following along. But we tried to get across how much work goes into it. I mean, she loves doing that class, and it means so much.
I also think like with Iris, for whatever reason, for us, that was what was really interesting for her, because she just did it naturally. It wasn't as interesting to her, because we kept saying, it's amazing that you don't have an assistant, I mean, she schedules everything. I mean, she knows, she is so sharp, and she knows where she's supposed to be. And you say, you're supposed to be there at 2:00. And she's like, no, it's 2:30. And she just knows. But for her, because I think it's natural, it wasn't as interesting to her. And I think that throughout, like working on the film, we had to keep figuring out how to say, you know, I know you don't think this is amazing, but this is actually really amazing. Yeah.
It's a little cat and mouse, a little push and pull. Right.
Other questions?
Yeah. What did she say about the process? I mean, was she happy with it at the end and things like that?
This is a funny question, because we keep joking, because a lot of she went to the New York Film Festival. She went to the Hamptons Film Festival. We had screened it for her before, and her immediate reaction was that she hadn't seen it. Like publicly, she would say she hadn't seen the film yet, and I think she meant hadn't really let it, you know, really seen it. But she's happy with it. You know, I think she's afraid to say that a little bit, though. I mean, I think it's hard for her to really comment on it. She likes hearing that other people like it, definitely. But,
and I think also one of the things about that she took faith in is that we would do the best job that we could do to make a, you know, to make a film, and that she's a really smart businesswoman, and she's sharp, and she knows what she does well. And she had faith in what we would do well. And so I think in that way, she has faith that it's good. And she you know, sometimes she would get frustrated because it was 4 years. And she'd be like, you know, where is this film? And it's a long time. Yeah. But I mean, I think she also understood. And I think at the end of it. But for her, I think it's also really important for her as to like what her friends think. And
it was really important for her that Albert liked it. That was definitely, that comes up a lot.
Any more? Right here, actually.
I just wanted to know more about the decision to include side interviews, which with individual people, which is something that I've never seen in any of other Al's and David's films.
I mean, there are some. It's rare. It's not a direct cinema thing that we really tried to set up. Part of the problem for us was a lot of you know, we weren't there at the Met show. You know, we started in 2011 and we were trying to find interesting ways to talk about things or really cover things that there just really wasn't a way to do. I mean, we would set up, you know, Iris talking to someone else, like Bruce Weber. You know, we would try to set it up to be at least a little bit more of a conversation, less of an interview. But in this situation, and we did take some things out. We actually had like a lot of rough cut screenings. And I think that there were more people talking about her and more interviews with people talking about her. And it just wasn't working as much as that interview of her talking about herself. That's really telling. I mean, she's a really private person. I know it doesn't seem that way, but it was a lot of like sort of my favorite footage is towards the end of the process, which really she opened up a little bit more. But some of the things we just wanted to tell a little bit more about her and didn't have.
Okay. I mean, I think also when we were looking at it with Paul and with Al, you know, Al really did think that, you know, he was a type of person who breaks a lot of rules. And he was like, look, it works in this situation. And maybe it hasn't worked in the past, but it makes sense in this situation. So we all agree that, you know, I don't know, rules are made to be broken.
And the main idea, too, is Albert kept saying the idea is to get as close as possible. Let's get closer. Let's get closer. So in this instance, it made it closer.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Yes, in the white.
I was just wondering what it was like to actually be in her apartment. Like, what did it feel really closed in? Or, I mean, just what did it feel like? And how many rooms were there? It's hard to tell from the movie. Just curious.
I think that in her apartment in New York, there are probably 7 or 8 rooms. We were in about 4 of them. I grew up in a very packed house with a lot of stuff. So for me, it felt very comfortable. I really liked it. I don't know for other people. I mean, for me, what I also really liked is I liked that all the characters were things that she had connections to, and she knew what they were, and it would be fun because sometimes Paul would add these things, and there was like an owl that I had never seen before in the footage and stuff like that. So for me, I really enjoyed it, but that's something that's comfortable for
and
me.
They really did feel like her kids. Like she really talked. We left a lot of footage out of her talking to the little creatures, and she and Carl really interact with the creatures in Palm Beach, especially.
Yeah, I was sitting on the couch, and she's like, did you say hi to the professor? And I was like,
yeah.
Like, and there's this like little rabbit with spectacles on, and I was like, oh, the professor.
And they love that RCA dog. There's a real, like, she loves Miss Piggy, she loves Mickey Mouse. And one of the first shoots was that interview with Carl and Iris, and she's wearing the Mickey and Minnie denim shirt. And I just didn't notice the house as much as their relationship was just really so spectacular. They've been married 67 and a half years, and there's just real passion there. And it was nice to see. That's what was remarkable in the beginning.
The question over here in the aisle.
Hi. Thank you so much. This is just fantastic. I kept thinking when I looked at her and through that time, I kept thinking of Carol Channing because they're both bigger than life people. And I'm wondering, did she have final say about what's up there on the screen?
We didn't. That was part of the process. It was a little bit of a tug of war, too. I feel like maybe, you know, we had a lot of discussions internally about it. I think she wanted to join more in the edit room. I was really against it. I think more because out of curiosity, which is her nature, but also in her nature is to be controlling. I don't mean that in a negative connotation, but she's so careful with her style and every single detail. It seemed like something that could get messy and maybe raise her hopes. And, you know, she didn't have creative say over the project. You know, it was, if there was something, you know, we showed her a rough cut screening. If there was something in it that she really didn't want in it, we would have considered that. But
and there wasn't ever any moment where there was anything that she said, you have to pull it out.
Yeah.
And the only thing that we were concerned is when she talks about her hip surgery and that, you know, she said she thought about it for a second, but, you know, that didn't really bother her.
She was worried that the film makes her come across as shallow. I mean, she is very, what do you call it?
Philanthropic.
And, you know, she has other interests. You know, she doesn't love fashion only. And I think she was worried that she kind of gets pushed into this category of just this one thing. And she's obviously so whip smart and business savvy and alert and curious and interested in other things. So I think maybe that was the only concern we heard from her. And we're really careful to try to show the different realms that she's just so involved in and creative with.
Any other questions? Was there, yeah, right here.
Hi, it was really great. I had a question. You talked about her sort of being closed off or you know, not sort of willing to talk and opening up towards the end. And I noticed that there was really only one time, other than her wedding, that she talked about her family or how she grew up. She talked about her mother and how she was upset about her leaving. Was it a choice to not bring up her childhood, or was that questions that you asked her that she never actually answered?
The big joke was Rebecca did all of the, and I should let you talk about it, but was kind of kept working with her to get photos and fabric samples and archival. Like, Rebecca really was like going to the apartment all the time, and I'm really jealous because seeing her in her bathrobe, which is her work outfit, which we didn't see that often when we were shooting, but, The wedding album was something, you know, together we kept asking her about, and she couldn't find it. And then when we finally saw it, we're like, that's the hugest album. How did you not know? Like, it was a really funny
actually
moment.
What happened was that I had been asking her, so I don't have anything like that. And then a woman who works with her, because it was Carl's birthday, and they did this big thing for his 100th birthday. And she said, oh, yeah, Iris pulled out this wedding album, and it's the biggest. I mean, it's like this. And I was like, she's, oh, yeah, it's always been there. So I think, like, with Iris, it's a little bit of a game. But there wasn't any, I mean, it just, the childhood stuff didn't fit, but not for any reason other than it didn't fit. I mean,
she seemed happy. She had a happy childhood. She didn't, or didn't want to talk about it that much with us. And there was a point where we asked about it quite a bit, but it just didn't.
And the stories that would come up about her childhood were more about how she got her work ethic from her family, and that she was around people who worked really hard. And I think, you know, in the stories of, like, her mom that come out a little bit, I think that comes out a little bit. That, for her, in that storyline, I thought that's what I learned the most about her family.
Well, I think that's all we have time for, so we're going to leave it there. But thank you so much, Lauren, Rebecca, and congratulations.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.